is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Lisa Black, and the name of her book is What Harms You? Oh, this is an exciting book. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Wow. Oh, I love this book. I love this book. Oh, I love this book.
Well, thank you.
Well, I love this new series, the Low Card Institute Thrillers, are so good. When you were here for the first book, I said, oh, this is great, this is great. Now this one, I mean, you've outdone yourself. New York Times best-selling author, and you deserve it because this one is so, it's just so good.
Well, I'd love to hear that.
Well, you know, you have, you're doing for forensic writing what Abby Schudo did for forensics on TV. You make it come alive.
Good. I hope a little slightly more realistically than TV.
Yeah, well, she has to do everything in 55 minutes.
In an hour, yeah.
Yeah, you know, she, with commercials, too.
I get
too.
That. Yeah, really. So it's more like 35 minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, she does pretty well. But, and she does it all herself, too, by the way. She doesn't have this whole institute that you've got here working.
Mm-hmm.
So, tell us about the Low Card Institute. It's the concept is wonderful, and this new story. Well, I got such a kick out of it because it's suspenseful. There are a lot of different sort of minor storylines that go throughout it. Little mysteries too. So tell us about this new book and about the whole setting for the book.
Well, I came up with a low card as it's like one-third research. They have a whole score of professors and scientists there who work in every field of, you know, forensics, from fingerprints to digital analysis to, you know, paint and glass, DNA, everything, and question documents. So they... Like, one-third of the institute is devoted to research, one-third is devoted to training, mostly law enforcement professionals and other scientists, and then one-third will be private cases so that Ellie and Rachel can be basically traveling around the country at, you know, to these high-profile situations and, you know, where they're investigating on behalf of a private client. And... which in the first book, in Red Flags, that's why Rachel is there, because she's hired by the father. So in this book, it's entirely set at the Low Card Institute around their training classes, because I've been in forensics for going on 35 years now, and I've had like over 1,200 hours of continuing education, which, you know, in forensics is where you learn all the specialty kind of fields where you don't get in college. Even if you have a forensic science degree, and you get more, you know, hands-on practice with it, et cetera. So this is a very common thing in my field. So I thought, you know, it just popped into my head, what happens if a serial killer goes to CSI school, you know, obviously with the purpose of learning everything he shouldn't do and needs to avoid if he wants to keep not getting caught. So once there, he simply can't resist, he or she simply can't resist, you know, committing murders right under the noses of the people who are considered the best in the country at catching, you know, people like them.
An egotist wants to get away with the perfect crime.
Yes, well, most serial killers are.
So, now, Dr. Ellie Carr, the book starts, it's her first day on the job. And she's got a lot of things happening in her life, including a new house.
Yeah. She was recently divorced and, you know, living, divorced from the man who runs the lab where she used to work for the FBI. So she was kind of happy to get away from that, even though they're on amicable terms. And so she was so thrilled about coming to the Low Card Institute, which is just internationally renowned. And I just love this idea of, you know, her coming in on her first day in the job, and she's so excited, you know, and you know, trying not to show it. Of course, she's being a professional. She's got to take over a class for a professor who's going to be leaving to start this new, to present this new concept of tracing serial killers. And that predecessor winds up, you know, just a few hours later, dead in a supply closet in what looks like it could be an accident. It, you know, it should be an accident. It's just an accident. But Rachel and Ellie just can't quite see that. You know, they're like, yeah, but... And so that kind of starts things off.
Well, it better not be an accident, because then the book would have been too short. So, so it's just the right length. It keeps us turning the pages. It's very exciting. The writing is terrific. Of course, you wrote a previous series, and your writing is well known, you know, to be terrific. And in this one, you pull out all
Thank
the
you.
Stops, I think. And your background, of course, is, as you said, in forensics. Now, you've appeared in court a number of times, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's part of the job.
Your specialty was
it's
what?
The worst part of the job. Well, at the coroner's office in Cleveland, I did hairs and fibers, paint and glass, gunshot residue, clothing examination. But here in Cape Coral, for the past 23 years, I mostly do fingerprints. I'm a certified latent print examiner. And then we all do, you know, crime scene work, processing evidence, going to crime scenes, photographing, documenting, measuring, collecting the evidence, etc.
And you don't like going to court?
Yeah, court is like the worst part of the job, because you have no control over it. You have to be there when they tell you to be there. You have to stay there as long as they tell you to stay there. You're on the stand. You have no control over what they ask you or how they ask you. And, you know, sometimes it'll be no further questions, and sometimes it'll be, you know, an hour or two of these obscure things, and you just never know. And as I said, you have no control over any of it.
A lot of waiting around.
Yes. There's a lot of waiting, you're not in sitting in court watching everybody else testify. So it's not even interesting. You're in a tiny little windowless room, and the only saving grace is now the courthouse has free Wi-Fi. So that makes things a little bit better.
So you can do some surfing while you're waiting to testify.
Yeah. You can get some work done. Yeah, I've take my iPad and get my writing done. But with COVID, it stopped entirely, and they haven't really gotten quite back up to speed yet. So I haven't had to do that a lot lately.
So, you know, it's so much fun. Doing research is so much fun in general. And then that is your bailiwick, you are great at it in real life, and it makes it so much fun that you can use all this knowledge in your books.
Yes. Yeah. It's handy, kind of, because it's got a dual purpose. It's like anything I learn, I can use on the job, and I can use in the book as well. So, yeah, sometimes I'll go, like, at work, they had a deception detection, like how to tell when somebody's lying, for the police officers. It was part of, you know, continuing ed that they, like, routinely have. And I contacted and said, can I go to this? You know, like, I don't need a certificate or anything like that. I don't need it to count for anything. I'd just like to take the class. And they said, well, yeah, if there's room, if they've got a space, you can take it. So I did. So I went for, like, 2 days and... You know, got the course on how to tell when somebody's lying to you.
Oh,
and a book that went with it. So I do refer back to that quite often.
Okay, well, on NCIS, it's always that if you look left, then you're lying. So
yeah, that's not really true.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like theoretically true, but I always say, you know, what if something moved to his left or something and caught his eye, or, you know, or what if he just, you know, realized, oh, there's a window there, you know, you know, like squirrel.
and then I always wondered,
no, that sort of thing.
And I always wondered if it was different for left-handed people. Like, would only right-handed people would look left if they're lying, or would left-handed people look right when they're lying? So, since I'm left-handed, I've been curious about that.
That's why, just like a physical lie detector, they always ask them a ton of questions first, just little innocuous, you know, what's your name, where do you live, that kind of thing, just to get like a baseline of how they behave. Because if they're a very hyperactive person normally, then they're going to have all these sorts of movements in which, you know, somebody else who isn't like that, tends to be a more relaxed person, isn't going to do unless they're under some kind of stress.
Well, now, of course, you're a great writer. What writers influenced you?
I would say, like, Alistair MacLean, really. I always go back to, because, I mean, I not only read everything he wrote, I have a copy of everything he wrote. And I think I learned a lot about characterization from him, because his characters are, they don't do a lot of internal thought. I mean, it's what I call navel gazing. He doesn't go on for paragraphs and paragraphs about what they're thinking. It's like you focus more on what they're doing. And that's kind of how I write, I think. You know, my characters are always doing something. There's some immediate purpose that they're trying to fulfill. And along the way, you get to know how they think and how they feel. But it's through that. And P.D. James. I love P.D. James and Jeffrey Deaver and Lisa Gardner. I think I learned a lot about plotting and pacing from Lisa Gardner.
Well, she's great. Yeah, she's been on the program. Same with Jeffrey. I love them, and you're right. Their writing is so good that you do, when you finish reading their books, there's something that sort of gets in you. This joy that they have found in writing. Now, have you ever made a pilgrimage to an author's house or birthplace?
No. No, I have not.
No?
No. I don't know where any of them live, actually. I mean, I probably would for Alistair MacLean or P.D. James, but they live in England, and that'd be a little difficult to get to. Even though I have been to England, but that wasn't on the schedule.
Well, you can always go back and do that. You can go you can go to Agatha Christie's house.
Oh, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. There are nice literary tours, actually, of England. You can go around to all the places where famous authors have been and lived, and it's lots of fun. I mean, I actually moved to England because of Jane Austen. I wanted to live near where she was born. So that was sort of a big pilgrimage. I just picked up and I moved to England and bought a 400-year-old
cottage.
That's
dedication.
Yeah, that's dedication. Of course, here in Florida, you can always tell when it's be the time for Hemingway's birthday, because all the guys around here start having growing beards. They go down to the the Keys.
Key West?
Yeah, for the contest. So... So that's a pilgrimage you can make. Of course, for you, you have a full-time job. So promotion-wise, do you do events? Do you go like to BoucherCon and things like that to promote your books?
I'm not going to BoucherCon this year. I went to Writers for New Orleans, and I went to Sleuthfest over in Deerfield Beach. But I have been to BoucherCon in the past, and I'm planning to go next year. So, yeah, conventions are great. But, you know, like you said, I do still have the day job, so there's a limit to how much I can do.
After the pandemic, I don't enjoy traveling anymore. People are crazy on airplanes, and you always get a feeling that there's going to be a crime right on the airplane, and then we need a forensic person in there to gather evidence. I was a medical technician when I was young, and I liked the idea of forensics, but I didn't like blood and guts.
if
they're mixed up, you know. So, yeah, so I think it takes a very special person to do it, but You obviously enjoy your work, and now you, with the new book, also I think you're enjoying getting into the basics of refurbishing a house.
I'm kind of a HGTV addict, and I don't actually watch it, but if I'm anywhere where it's on, then I'm like glued to it, and I turn it on when I go down. We have a gym in the police department, so just during the day, because I work 12-hour shifts, so I'll go down and get on the treadmill for, you know, just 10 minutes to stretch my legs, and I'll always put on HGTV. But also, we're my husband and I have some land in Tennessee that we're planning to build on in the next year or two, so now I'm really thinking about houses and, you know, decorations and renovations and things like that.
Well, I have a feeling Dr. Ellie Carr is going to have fun with this. The third book is already written, or you're in the middle?
No, it's already written. We'll be out next March, I believe, and it's called The Deepest Kill.
Okay, well, you're having lots of fun with that, and of course her colleague is Dr. Rachel Davies. And Dr. Yes. Rachel Davies also is, you've got a nice dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, Rachel is very interesting. She's very, very, like, calmer, I guess, compared to Ellie's life has been kind of crazy with, you know, being an orphan and raised with different relatives, even though they were all wonderful, but it was still a little up in the air always. And, you know, Rachel has had a very stable upbringing and lives with her widowed mother because they are raising her late sister's toddler, who she's absolutely crazy about. So, you know, Rachel is very, very grounded, but, you know, of course, she's the assistant dean of the Locard, which she's given her, like, her life, 10 years of her life to this institution, so she, you know, feels very strongly about it. And so, but now she's torn between wanting to be home with, you know, the toddler and just all the usual pressures, you know, of especially being female and, you know, being having a career as well.
Well, I just want to tell my listeners they'll enjoy this book, and you can read this book, and then you can go back and read book one. But the new book is called What Harms You? It's suspenseful. It's filled with lots of information. I think people always like to, when they come away from a book, I think it's enjoyable to know something new, and they will know something new from the way you present the forensic information. I love it. It's fascinating. Again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's Lisa Black. What Harms You? And your website is just Lisa Black. Is it just Lisa Black?
Lisa-Black.com.
I knew there was something about it. Lisa-Black. Yeah, okay. Lisa-Black. people can go to your website and find out more about you and your other books. And again, I will see you back here in March, okay?
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today. Lisa Black, What Harms You? And a special thanks to Kensington, because I always love to invite Kensington authors to be on Joy on Paper, because you're a joy.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
All right. That is it's a good book. Oh, I love this forensic. I love it. Really great and wonderful storyline, wonderful story, great mystery, and it is available online, and you can get that. A special thanks again to Kensington for that book and for all the other authors they've been sending me. I just got a whole bunch of new books from Kensington. Bye-bye now.